Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Got the update from One Bills Drive. There's a trade in the NFL today, believe it or not. The Baltimore Ravens have an agreement in principle to trade former Super Bowl MVP Joe Flacco, the quarterback, to the Denver Broncos. The trade cannot be officially processed until the new league year begins a month from today, March 13th. When the deal is completed, it is said to be for a fourth-round pick. A fourth-round pick goes from Denver to Baltimore for Joe Flacco. The first trade domino as far as quarterbacks to fall this offseason. Other quarterbacks in play would seem to be Nick Foles, Ryan Tannehill, Tyrod Taylor, Blake Bortles, maybe expecting to change teams, but Joe Flacco is now a Denver Bronco. The Bills have offensive lineman Spencer Long under contract now, signed a three-year contract yesterday. Spencer Long, former third-round pick of Washington, scheduled to be on our show tomorrow. Deadline for an Antonio Brown deal, maybe a trade, is said to be March 17th. That's what NFL.com says. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network says that the likely deadline for the Steelers potentially trading Brown is March 17th because that's when a $2.5 million roster bonus takes effect for the Steelers and Antonio Brown. Cliff Kingsbury, who said back in October that he really likes the quarterback, Kyler Murray, now says he's sticking with Josh Rosen. Kingsbury, the new head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, says our feelings toward Josh have not waned or changed or anything. Murray announced Monday he's going to go with football rather than baseball. And the Oakland Raiders have had their first talks about returning for one final season in Oakland. Coliseum Executive Director Scott McKibben said he met with the Raiders president last week about a lease for a one-year deal for 2019. They're talking about a $7.5 million lease for 2019. Sabres on the ice for practice tomorrow. They finish off their seven-game homestand with a game against the New York Rangers. That's coming up on Friday night. Last night, Sabres beat the Islanders 3-1 at KeyBank Center. Goals from Jeff Skinner, Jason Pominville, and Johan Larson. And St. Bonaventure with a dominant 76-51 win over St. Joe's. Last night, Bonnie's 10-14 overall. They go to 6-5 in A-10 play. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker here until 3 o'clock. Joined on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline by one of our favorite guests. She is senior writer at Sports Illustrated, contributor to MMQB.SI.com, former Jets and Giants beat reporter. Happy to have Jenny Vrentas on the line with us. Hello, Jenny. John Murphy and Steve Tasker up here in Buffalo. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
We're good. You're fully recovered from the grind of the Super Bowl, I would imagine, by now, right?
Yeah. It's always a little bit, a little good to take some downtime after the season, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Jenny, we got to ask you, I mean, were you surprised at all that Kareem Hunt was signed this early in the offseason?
I was surprised by the timeline, absolutely. It's only been 10 weeks essentially since the video of the altercation in which he shoved and then kicked a woman in the hallway of a residence at Cleveland was made public by TMZ, and that's when the Chiefs released him for not being truthful to the team about what had happened that night. And he admitted in his ESPN interview that he hadn't yet begun counseling at that point. So I don't believe that there should be zero tolerance. I think experts say that generally makes situations worse, and that part of rehabilitation is passed back. So I'm not saying that people shouldn't have a second chance, but I do think you should have to earn the second chance, and that there's kind of a wide spectrum between zero tolerance and signing someone just 10 weeks later. And, I think you sort of saw that reflected in John Dorsey's press conference. He didn't have a lot of specific examples or reasoning to explain why Hunt had earned a second chance. And I think it would be hard at this point to have any conviction to believe that someone who was involved in not just one, but, three alleged altercations last year, one I just described earlier, and then two, which he was alleged to have punched a man. So obviously there's, multiple incidents. And so I think to sign someone and to give him an opportunity, I think you'd want to make sure that person has already gone through the steps rather than signing him and hoping that happens.
How much responsibility does the league have towards both sides of this equation, both the victims of the incident and also to a guy like Kareem Hunt, who's the employee and the connection the league has to the whole thing. What's the league's responsibility in that, do you think, in best case scenario?
Yeah, I think it's just such a hard topic to have the right answer for, right? You mm-hmm. know, and I think we see that the legal system doesn't always have the right answers. And so certainly expecting that a sports league would have the right answer is probably just never going to happen. And so I think that's where we're always going to struggle when we talk about situations like this or other violations of the personal conduct policy. You know, what's the right amount of time for a suspension or the right amount of time to wait to sign someone? And I don't know that there is a great answer there, but I do think 10 weeks feels too short. And also, you know, he will be on the commissioner's exempt list now, and the league investigation, Dorsey said they expect to wrap up in a few weeks. Now, he didn't explain why they signed him now before that's wrapped up, but it would certainly seem to indicate that they kind of wanted to get a jump on it and make sure that no one else signed him. I think maybe a minimum bar would just sort of wait for the investigation to play out and see what the results are there, and also to give, you know, him more time to go through counseling and really demonstrate that his behavior has changed. I think one point that Dorsey could have made that he didn't, he could have suggested that being part of a team and the structure and the resources might help him on his path to changing his behavior. But they didn't seem that they were certain of exactly how much they would help. That wasn't something that was clearly laid out. So they said they have a plan, but there was no clear indication of how involved the team would be and if it might be beneficial for him to be part of the team through this process. So I think we're always just going to struggle here and asking a sports league and a sports team that is in the business of winning to have the right answer and to be moral arbiters. And I think that's where the conversation is always going to kind of get caught up.
Jenny, this sports league, the NFL, after the redo of the Ray Rice incident, it sort of established a standard, right? Like a bare-bones six-week minimum suspension for a domestic violence incident. Am I correct on that, or is that just a couple of incidents have been handled that way? And how does this apply to what Kareem Hunt might wind up getting?
You're right. It was supposed to be a six-week was sort of the minimum bar for any violation of the conduct policy. Obviously, this is a little slightly different. It wasn't intimate partner violence, but it was, you know, violence against the woman. But we have seen that sixth game, which was supposed to sort of be the standard, has really been a sliding scale more than they initially sold it to be. So I think the lack of consistency in how discipline has been applied has kind of undercut the league's policies in this area. I think that's certainly one issue. You know, basically, yeah, you're saying things are less bad than others, and I think that's always, like I said before, that's always going to be the complication. But I do expect in this case it will probably be six at least, because, you know, there was not just one incident, there were multiple.
Right. And do you think that's enough?
I don't know the right answer to that. I don't know what's enough. You know, like I said before, you know, I don't think that zero tolerance is the answer. I think when teams talk about zero tolerance, it's more complicated than saying simply if someone, you know, hit someone, they can never have a way back in. Sure, there is a path back to employment, and earning that is important to have. On the other hand, this isn't just a regular job, right? It's a job where you're on a big stage and you're a public figure. So earning a path back to employment is different than earning a path back to the NFL stage. So I think if you have zero tolerance, the problem with that is that it makes women or victims of violence less likely to report. I think that's the biggest concern, or that it could make dangerous situations even more dangerous. And I think that's the flaw with zero tolerance, according to experts. But I think you have to figure out, you know, there's got to be a better answer than signing someone, you know, just 10 weeks after an incident like this kind of came to light.
Last question on this issue I have for you, Jenny, is that I have read in some quarters, people not congratulating the Browns for doing this, but basically saying, hey, they're smart. They got ahead of it. Now they have an asset that may or may not get suspension, but at least they have an asset that might just turn around, right? That John Dorsey might turn around and get something in exchange for the rights to Kareem Hunt. And again, they're not congratulating them on that, but you know how it is in the NFL. People tip their caps. Nice move, Browns. I've seen some of that. What do you make of that?
I have seen a lot of that as well, because from a football standpoint, it's a good football move, right? I mean, you are buying low on a guy. You figure he'll have some kind of suspension this year, but he'll be a restricted free agent heading into the next season, so you have an opportunity to hold on to him as a player. So from that standpoint, and that's basically, you know, John Dorsey's making a football decision here. Calling it anything else would be flawed, right?
Yeah.
So there are people that are going to look at it that way. But, you know, it doesn't feel great, and it feels like it's too short. And, you know, yeah, maybe if they'd waited, another team would have jumped in. But it also felt like a risk they didn't have to take. I mean, speaking from a purely football perspective, I mean, it wasn't a risk they had to take, right? If you look at the roster, they have a lot of talented tailbacks. And so you sort of wonder exactly why it was so important to them to take this gamble and not talk to anyone in their locker room, right? I mean, that's the other part of it, is that the investigative process that they underwent, you know, they said they didn't talk to, Dorsey said he didn't talk to any current players, did not reach out to the victim. So the level of fact-finding, particularly in a situation where we know that the Chiefs cut Hunt because they said he was untruthful with them. So your whole fact-finding cannot just be talking to him.
Right, exactly. And one of the things we also wanted to talk to you about, Jenny, was the new head coaches around the National Football League. A couple of coaches switch places within the division. Adam Gase goes from the head coach of the Dolphins to the head coach of the Jets, and Brian Flores is the defensive coordinator of the New England Patriots, goes to be the head coach of the Dolphins. So what do you make, first of all, Brian Flores, a guy a lot of people don't know very much about. Seems guys have emerged from the Bill Belichick coaching staff before and had limited success. What do you know about Brian Flores, and how do you expect it to go in Miami?
Yeah, it's so interesting, right? Because Brian Flores, like many Patriots assistants, you know, has spent his entire career there basically being cross-trained. You know, he started as a scouting assistant. He spent a little time, you know, doing some work as an offensive assistant, and then he was on the defensive side of the ball, which is just such a typical New England career path. And so a lot of times when these guys are in more prominent roles, they're not very well known because they've sort of been, you know, inside the Patriots building, and they haven't really been out front. And so this was his first year as a play caller, and that's when I think we first started learning more about him. I think, you know, a couple of things stand out. One is the number of assistants that went to Miami with him, and not all of them went for larger roles. Chad O'Shea did go for a larger role, but, you know, Josh Boyer, the cornerback's coach, Shuplinski, the assistant quarterback's coach, so a lot of them went for lateral moves. And so I think that does speak a little bit to, you know, that he is a guy that people have belief in. And I was around the Patriots leading up to the Super Bowl, and I actually did a story on Flores. You know, he's balancing a lot of things off the field. His mother has been undergoing treatment for cancer, and this past fall stopped treatment and is in hospice care. And, you know, he had bought her a home in Foxborough and would visit her every night, essentially, on his way home from the office, however late that may be. As we all know, coaches' schedules are crazy. So I think that, you know, he's a man that has a lot of character and knows how to multitask and handle difficult situations. And I do think I did sense, you know, this loyalty from players. And he called that blitz play that resulted in the interception that really helped seal the game for the Patriots. And I do think there's a sense that maybe this is a guy who could succeed outside the Belichick tree. Obviously, the track record has not been great, but maybe he has a chance, and I do think he has a very natural leadership style about him, and so I was impressed with my interactions with him.
We're on the line with Jenny Vrenta, Sports Illustrated senior writer. You mentioned, Jenny, you were around the Patriots a lot Super Bowl week. You were the pool reporter, right? The one reporter assigned to go to their practices and watch what they were doing, getting ready for the game?
Yeah, that was a really interesting assignment, you know, having the chance to see practice and the way they prepare for the Super Bowl and just how focused and how every detail matters. You know, obviously, if a team's in the Super Bowl, you would probably expect that. But I think it was interesting just to see, you know, this this team has been such a, you know, machine for the last, you know, 18, 19 years, right? So I think that just kind of seeing that focus at practice was interesting. And the day before the game, they had sort of a family day at the stadium, and all the families came for pictures and things. But even while there, Belichick and Brady were looking around the stadium and taking notes about things for the game and having discussions. And Belichick was kind of flagging things to remind his team about with the stadium. So I think just the level of detail that you see that goes on behind the scenes there was really interesting to see.
I know you wrote about this a little bit during Super Bowl week, and I'm wondering now, you know, a week and a half after the game, any thoughts on Rob Gronkowski and his future? Did you get the sense that he was approaching the Super Bowl as if it might be his last NFL game?
I got his comment the week before the game just about how, you know, how much of a toll the game can take after a while, and, you know, your body is sort of beaten down in so many different ways. I thought those were interesting comments because, you know, I think when players start to think about that, and obviously he mulled retirement last season, so it's something that's been on his mind. And in the position that he plays, he has taken a beating. You know, he's a big guy who at times performs like a receiver, at other times is a blocker, really transformed that position. But I think this year, while he was healthier in the Super Bowl, then you saw him get that quad strain midway through the game, and he was hobbling around in the locker room. And I think watching him play and hearing his comments, it's clear how much of a physical toll he's taken, you know, the game has taken on him over his career. And I think it's kind of a toss-up. Anytime a guy says they're considering retirement, you know, it feels like a very real possibility. Although, sure, in some ways, you know, it did feel like this year in New England was a big contrast to last year. It felt very much like they had put the issues of last season behind them, and it was very kumbaya, and you could tell that, you know, Gronkowski and Brady and Belichick were all having fun and enjoying each other's company. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he came back despite all of his comments, but it certainly wouldn't be a shock if he retired also.
And one of the other things we asked you about is the Adam Gase move to the Jets. Why Adam Gase to the Jets? What's the biggest reason for that happening?
They were looking for someone to take Sam Darnold on the next step of his development. I think that's, they felt like that, you know, Gase was a guy who could do that. They got an endorsement from Peyton Manning, which I'm sure helps the Jets' decision-making a little bit. His track record in Miami, you know, obviously was not great, though he did, you know, play a bunch of games without his starting quarterback. And I don't think it was the best situation that he entered into, right, because the team was already committed to Tannehill. And so he was kind of in a spot where you try to make it work with the quarterback, and then Tannehill's injured a bunch, and then you get to the end of 3 years, and you know, the team wants to start a rebuild, and a coach heading into his fourth year doesn't want to start a rebuild. So I don't know that I was such a player in Miami. Obviously didn't go well, but I don't hate the Jets move. I mean, I think there is a possibility that he could be a guy that is great for Darnold, and that he has worked with a lot of different quarterbacks in his career and can help, you know, bring some of that to Darnold. On the other hand, you know, there were some questions in Miami, you know, some about the locker room and how players responded. So I think that he's got to sort of learn from those, you know, any issues that came up there, and sort of, you know, your second time around, hopefully you don't make some of the same mistakes as the first time.
Jenny, we got one more team to ask you about, and we've talked about the Steelers on our show here all day today, about Antonio Brown, about Le'Veon Bell. Just an overview, what do you think's going on down there? It is very uncharacteristic for the Pittsburgh Steelers to have this much turmoil in the offseason and this much uncertainty about who's back, who's coming back. What do you make of all that?
Yeah, and with such a high-profile player, that's, you know, difficult to replace. It was such a weird season. I was there early in the year to do something on Bell during his, you know, early season absence, obviously extended for the whole season. And it was such a weird vibe hearing that, you know, usually you don't hear teammates, right, come out and speak out against other teammates. They all sort of understand that this is a business and they respect those business decisions. But I think they felt like the way Bell handled things, that really set off a lot of his teammates. And then with Brown, you know, that final game of the season, essentially quitting on the team, I think that's a hard sell to have a guy back in the locker room after that happens. At the same time, you know, what do the Steelers have to gain from a trade, right? I mean, they would take a big cap hit if they traded him. They would lose their best player with you know, an aging quarterback, you feel like you're at the end of a window. And so, you know, Brown wants out, and at this point it feels like the Steelers kind of have no choice but to go that direction because it might be past the point of no return. But I don't think you can totally rule out some kind of reconciliation.
All right. Yeah, that's it. I got to agree with you. It's hard to get past for a lot of players, and even if some players can and others can't, it's a hard decision to sell to the entire locker room, and I think you got to have everybody on board with whatever happens, and I think Antonio Brown made that almost impossible.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very well said.
Jenny, thanks for this. Great work all season long, but especially a couple of weeks ago at the Super Bowl as the pool reporter. We thank you very much for being with us here today and hope to cross paths again soon, maybe at the Combine.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jenny.
Jenny Vrentas, Sports Illustrated senior writer, contributor to mmqb.si.com, former Jets and Giants beat reporter. Jenny joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline presented by Subway Restaurants, proud to be locally owned and operated. I want to discuss this with you, Steve, just briefly. So I asked Rich Cimini about Adam Gase yesterday. You asked Jenny about Adam Gase today. Look, my last impression of Adam Gase is that amazing news conference when he was introduced. And Cimini said it yesterday, and I got the sense from Jenny, too. People have sort of moved beyond that, it appears. It was weird video. Rich Cimini said it was kind of a social media thing. And it was. And he was crucified in social media within minutes of his face-making, eye-rolling news conference. But I'm getting the sense from people I respect, like Rich Cimini yesterday and Jenny Vrentas today, that who cares, right? He's still an NFL coach and maybe do a good job down there. What do you think?
Yeah, he can overcome that. There's no question about it. And I'll tell you, when you sit and talk with him, and I have with Adam Gase, he's a very engaging guy. He's very down to earth, and he's very much a locker room guy. He's casual. You see him when he walks around you'll see him when he walks around the facility when we do meetings with him. He's a jeans and flip-flop guy. And he doesn't change. When he's on the sidelines for the Dolphin games, that'll be the only time. He always has a baseball cap on. He did not in his press conference, but he has a baseball cap on always. And it's always backwards. The only time he has it forwards is when it's on camera, on the sideline, and he's been told you have to wear your hat forwards. Now, I don't know why he does that, but he wears that hat backwards constantly. He's just a young, casual, jeans, hoodie, T-shirt guy. He does not dress up. I don't think he likes it. I don't think he's comfortable doing it. He is very much a locker room bro kind of guy that players connect with. He's got a very young vibe, kind of almost a gamer vibe, real casual, and you know, slouches in his chair, you know, that kind of guy. He's got an incredible depth of knowledge as well. When you start talking to him about offenses and defenses, what he sees, what he talks about, he's all over it tactically, offensively. I think it was very telling that he learned something from his Miami days that he brought to the Jets. He brought Greg Williams as a defensive coordinator. We spent a lot of time talking about that yesterday. He needs somebody like Greg Williams on that side of the ball to head coach the defense. Greg Williams can do that. Adam Gase is a play caller, offensive guy who is going to get that offense clicking and give his quarterback some weapons. He's going to bring Sam Darnold along very well.
How do you know that? Where
he's going to struggle, I think, and that's just my opinion. You're right. It's just my opinion. I don't know that he's going to do that, but here's where I think he's going to struggle. Sooner or later, somebody's got to be the lead dog and say how it's going to be. It's hard for him to raise up and become an executive-type leader that I think an NFL team needs. He may be able to do that with the Jets more so than he did with the Dolphins, or he may handle that in a way that hasn't been – like, you know, in his own way that is effective in that manner. But I think that's one place where he struggled. He didn't wrap his arms around the entire organization the way I think a great head coach needs to do. And I think that's going to be his biggest test in New York.
That's going to be interesting to follow, Adam Gase, and how that turns out with the New York Jets. We got a good show going on. We got more time to do it as well and more discussion coming up. We're going to talk more about Joe Flacco traded to the Broncos, the deal made in principle today. If you have thoughts on that, give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. And should the Bills trade for wide receiver Antonio Brown of the Pittsburgh Steelers? That's our Twitter poll. It's a red-hot Twitter poll. It's pretty close. Should the Bills trade for Antonio Brown? 43% of you say no. he'd be bad for the Buffalo locker room. 33% of you say yes, but don't send away a first-round pick for him. 14% of you say yes, whatever it takes, get Antonio Brown here. 10% of you say nope, don't do it, he won't be effective. So 53% say don't trade for him, and 47% say yes, trade for him. What do you think? Phone lines open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Vote in the Twitter poll, send us a tweet, we may read it on the air. We can discuss that, we can discuss Joe Flacco. Whatever you'd like. We're coming back for more. Also, NFL True and False coming up. One Bills Live presented by Kalina Health from One Bills Drive. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Show is called One Bills Live. It comes from One Bills Drive. It is a wintry day. Wouldn't you say, Steve, today in Orchard Park? Wintry. You're laughing like, of course it
yeah.
is.
Yeah, it qualifies.
It was a wintry morning, and it has remained a wintry breezy.
It'll be a wintry
blustery
night.
Day. Yeah, I guess, huh? Have you heard? I haven't looked at any forecast.
I don't have to look at any forecast, bro.
Either. I don't
Come
need
on.
To.
Look
I don't
at it out
to.
There.
Hey, you know what we didn't do? This was at the urging of our producer, Jay Harris, who has pretty good ideas sometimes. He wanted you and I, you know, we're talking a lot these days on the show about what are you looking for from the offseason draft, free agency, how should the Bills position themselves?
Oh,
he said,
yeah.
Why don't you guys come up with your dream scenario?
Let me see if I can find mine. Well, I got it here somewhere.
Dream scenario. It's hard. Look, they're moving parts.
Yeah,
you're not going to ever get your dream scenario. You're not going to get everything you need.
Well, here that's the thing. I did mine thinking, yeah, I got a chance at this.
You did?
I did.
All right, let's hear it. Steve Tasker's offseason dream scenario for the Buffalo Bills. This is, we're talking about personnel, right?
Right. Yeah.
Let's hear yours.
Okay. First thing I did, trade for a big-name wide receiver, A.J. Green, Julio Jones.
Wow. Why need a big name, buddy?
Somebody who can go, man. I want somebody. I want somebody I can get behind.
Is John Brown a big name?
Yeah, he's a free agent, though.
Oh,
I want
okay.
somebody a team actually wants.
He's
going to
get.
Because
he's
free agents. I get it. Their contracts are running out on the team. But, you know, I mean, I want to trade for a guy who's got some, like A.J. Green or Julio or one of those. Somebody of that ilk. Like DeAndre Hopkins. You know, T.Y. Hilton. Go get one of those guys. Get somebody they really want, okay? That's number one. Number two, sign two dominant free agent offensive linemen. Big-time guys, free agents. I want to get the best offensive linemen
about
available.
The names.
Two of them.
What were we saying the other day? It's not about the names. It's about the games.
I don't care. Yeah, I don't care. I don't care who they are. I don't care what the names are.
Well, you got big names. A big-name wide receiver.
Well, yeah, I want one of those guys. I'm talking about dominant. Now I'm talking about offensive linemen. I want some big-time O-line, two of them. Just two.
That's two. All. Dominant, two dominant players.
All right. And then the third thing is draft a big-time edge rusher in the first round.
Okay.
Come on, man. You're acting like I'm off the kilter, and you're going to go to yours, and you're going to be almost just like mine.
They are very close to yours, although I think mine are a little more realistic.
Mine's realistic.
And I don't care about names, let me say that. My perfect offseason when it comes to personnel for the Buffalo Bills, draft, not sign, draft two starting caliber offensive linemen. They don't have to be in the first round. They don't have to be in the second round. They got to be big guys who can learn because these offensive linemen coming out of college are not, for the most part, finished products. The ones who are rare, like the Quentin Nelson at Indianapolis. But draft two of them, third round, fourth round, maybe even fifth round. Starting caliber guys who can walk in and start soon. Teach him up, coach him up, teach him how to play, and plug him in the starting lineup before the season's over. Two of them.
Okay.
All right.
You put that before I, okay, go ahead.
Sign free agents. Two dominant free agent, that's yours. Sign two starting caliber free agent wide receivers. Two different guys, too. A speed guy and a chain mover.
Like
a slot guy and a
Cole Beasley and a John Brown.
Yeah, I don't like Cole Beasley. But I like John Brown. He is my number one choice in the free agent market, I think. And he's fast enough. But I think he is close to being a complete package wide receiver. Can do a little bit of everything.
But Randall Cobb, Green Bay.
A little, yeah. How old is he? I worry about that a little bit.
All right, yeah.
And then finally, draft or sign a pass rush specialist. You might have to do a free agent.
So
here.
You're thinking
get a guy
this,
who can rush the passer,
draft,
pick up sacks.
After this draft, you're going to have two starting offensive linemen
yep.
and a draft pass rush specialist.
Yep.
You think that's more likely than signing two free agent offensive linemen?
Well, look, you can draft. You got draft edge rusher in the first round. You can draft a pass rush specialist in the first round if that's
we both
how the
that's,
draft
that's
falls.
Fine.
Yeah, we agree on that. And I also think in the third, maybe the second, but somewhere between the second and fourth round, likely, you can get a starting caliber offensive lineman. You don't need to sign two dominant free agent offensive linemen.
You said you got to get two.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Let's just go down to the numbers of who we think we need. I've got at least one big-time wide receiver. You've got two. And I've said two offensive linemen. You said two offensive linemen.
Right.
And we both said a pass rusher.
Right.
So basically,
five guys.
We're identical. What are we talking about? You can debate. What are
but
we
mine's
doing?
More
what are
realistic.
We debating?
You got caught up in names.
I don't.
You're looking for the big splash.
Wait, just,
you're looking for.
Just,
oh,
no, hold
yeah,
on,
we got a
just
name.
One minute.
We
just,
got.
But just pump the brakes for just a horse.
We got Mario
just,
Williams.
Just
yeah.
A hair's breadth here.
Who says
your boy Jay Harris said big name wide receiver. I just said a big time number one receiver.
Oh.
I didn't say big name.
Woo-hoo.
It doesn't matter if it's big name. If you've ever heard of him, I want a big time guy. And when you talk about that, of course we've heard of him.
I want a guy.
I want to trade.
We
for
talking
that
guy. Wide receivers
and if
here.
If we're trading for the guy, we're obviously going to know who that is.
Are we talking wide receivers? Because I want a guy who has room for improvement. Who's shown a little bit in his first contract in the NFL and is ready to take the next step.
Why?
With a big arm quarterback. I don't want a guy who's has already done it. I want a guy who's ready for the next step. I'm going to work with a big arm quarterback who can make me look good. John Brown. That's what I want. That's the type of guy I want.
You're
I don't care if they're
you're
big.
You're splitting hairs, Murph.
No.
That's my point. You're splitting hairs.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
All right. So there we go.
Your hair splitting.
No, I don't think so.
Yes, you are.
No, I don't care about big names. You're backing off your assertion that you want a big name.
Just because I can name some guys I'd like to trade for doesn't mean I'm caught up in their name. But we do know who those guys are. And you're telling me you'd rather have John Brown than DeAndre Hopkins.
DeAndre Hopkins will never be available to the Bills. And again,
listen, this is just best case scenario, dream scenario, in fact. Mine says dream scenario.
Mine was perfect offseason.
So now we're not even talking.
We're not even talking about the same thing.
You just want to argue.
We're not.
That's all there is to it.
Same thing here. All right, let's argue about this.
All right.
I came across this. I think it's interesting. The Carolina Panthers have given a defensive line coach, Sam Mills, who's been there for a while, given him new responsibilities. He's now going to be a game management coach as well as defensive line coach, Sam Mills. He will assist head coach Ron Rivera in clock management, replay challenges, and other situational football analysis. Yeah. Sam Mills has been there for 15 years. On the Panthers coaching staff. They're going to give him in charge of replay, time management, score management. I get it. That's a head coach's job, isn't it? You got to hire somebody. I mean, I know they got 15, 20, 25 assistant coaches, but that's a head coach's job to manage the game, to know when the right time is to call a timeout, know how to work the clock, isn't it, Steve?
Yes. I would say put it more like this. It's a head coach's responsibility.
Yeah.
So you can delegate that. And I tell you this, it's getting to the point where there's so much going on with replay, timeouts, clock management, replay challenges, all of that stuff that you just mentioned. And I've spoken to – remember Joe Philbin was a head coach of the Miami Dolphins. I spoke with him on a number of occasions during production meetings, and he said he spent an inordinate amount of time watching the last 5 minutes in real time of games around the National Football League.
Other games.
To see how coaches handled timeouts, when to take the timeout before the two-minute warning, after the two-minute warning, when do you save your timeouts for the last drive, when do you take them. Why would you take a timeout outside of the last half of the fourth quarter or the last half of the second quarter? All of these things about game and clock management, he spent an inordinate amount of time getting prepared for, because it's a little bit like an art form, because all of a sudden you do this and you take a timeout at the same point of the clock and the same point of the game 1 week, and it's wrong the next week because the team that's got the ball is now at a 3rd and 3 instead of a 1st and 10. It changes everything. And there are so many variables. You need a guy who does nothing but prepare for that so he can say, hey, no, take the timeout right now. That kind of thing. And that, so you got to be on top of it. And I've told you this before. A lot of coaches get that innately. They kind of seem to have a knack for it, but it's hard to do. And when you got a play clock ticking down and it's down in distance and the game is tight and you've already made a couple of decisions and there's a couple on the back burner that you're thinking about, you need somebody who's on it and you can say, hey, what about a timeout here? And they say yes or no. And that's big. That's really big. And I applaud him for I applaud Ron Rivera for saying, listen, I need some help with this.
All right, I guess. But, I mean, in this situation, Sam Mills is also going to continue to coach the defensive line.
Yeah.
So his attention will not be solely focused on game management. And I also want to bring this up, and this will prompt, you know, acres of eye-rolling around our listening audience. But Rex Ryan tried that with the Jets during his tenure with the Jets, hiring one guy whose sole purpose was to be upstairs in the booth and watch for replay challenges, watch for clock management, timeout management. Didn't work. Now, if you were around Rex Ryan a little bit, you would probably have no problem concocting reasons why it wouldn't work. And in fact, I talked to Rex about it when he was here, and he said, "Ah, sometimes we didn't pay attention to the guy. If he said, call a timeout here, we'd be like, nah, we know better." You know what I mean?
Right.
That was the guy that they hired, and that was, you know, quite frankly, that was kind of the way Rex worked. But he tried it, didn't work. He had a 1 year, I think the guy was there 1 year as a game management specialist upstairs with the Jets when Rex was there.
Well, there you go. I mean, you might do the right thing and then not use it, put the right tool in place and then not use it in the right way, which is what, you know, you can say that about it. But certainly, with replays, replay challenges, those kind of things, you've got to have some people you trust. You got to have some people who are on top of clock management and timeouts. And in fact, I would almost, you know, almost got to separate those two for me. Get a replay guy and then get a challenge, get a timeout
guy. You're
going
to have 35 assistant coaches.
Okay. I was thinking about this.
It's not that complex.
I get it. But think about this. How's come. We do, you know, once in a while it'll happen, but we harp back to the New England Patriots. They lost their defensive coordinator, although you can say what you want about how much of a defensive coordinator he was with Bill Belichick there. They lost their head defensive coordinator, and about three or four, five, a half a dozen other assistant coaches followed Brian Flores to Miami. They're going to probably promote guys to those positions from within, guys who are already on the payroll. How many guys do they got?
Yeah.
They've got, I think it's a beehive over there. I think they got like dozens upon dozens of guys who are working up through that pyramid of you got to earn your way by working 90 hours a week and do it for 20 grand a year. And
we got some of those types here too.
Hey, every team does have a certain amount of those guys, but you think about it. I'm going to be really interested to see the names of the guys that they elevate to those positions, because I really do think they're going to elevate some people rather than say, oh, by the way, we plucked this guy off of this staff and this guy off of this staff and that guy over there. That may get some guys from like Alabama.
Didn't
you know,
they hire
Nick
the former
Saban.
Rutgers coach the other day? I think they did.
Schiano, yeah. I think he is going to be on their staff. That's one, but that's a, you know, that's a rarity, you know.
Yeah, I mean he's an old. He's an old buddy of Belichick. Greg Schiano. Yeah, Greg
right.
is the name I'm looking
right,
for.
Right, right.
He's their defense coordinator now, right?
Did
they give him the title? I don't even know if they did.
Maybe. I don't know.
I'm looking that up. So they bring in some outsiders, but they got to be guys with a history, it seems, with Belichick.
Listen, the game is really complex, and it's starting to move faster and faster. And they're starting to, you know, they got this 40-second game clock that has been chopped off by the AAF down to 30 seconds. And they shut the microphones off at the 15-second mark. So basically you've got that first 30 seconds, you know, or first 20 seconds of time that where the play clock really counts before the snap. So everything's starting to move faster on the sidelines, and the decision-making process and how they get things done on the sidelines is starting to move pretty fast. You need more guys to help.
Greg Schiano spent the last 3 years as defense coordinator at Ohio State. He will call defensive signals for the Patriots. I don't think they've named him the defensive coordinator yet. And you're right. Yeah, and now I'll give you some names. They lost Brian Flores, who'll be the Dolphins head coach. Also headed to Miami from New England is Chad O'Shea, defensive passing game chief, and quarterbacks coach Josh Boyer, and assistant quarterbacks coach Jerry Schlupinski. The guys are leaving the Patriots. Patriots have to fill vacancies at linebacker coach, defensive line coach, corners, and assistant quarterbacks coach.
Four guys.
Yeah, so they'll probably win 12 games this year. Hey, would it be all right with you if we skipped NFL true and false?
Yeah, today? We can save it for tomorrow.
Yeah, because I don't like any of these true and false.
All right. You could say that before we get 2 hours and 45 minutes into the show.
Not doing anything for me.
All right.
A break. We're coming back, though. One Bills Live presented by Collider Health from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. So now it's time for What Have We Learned from Today's Show. It is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Arthur Motes on the show, spent 4 years as a Bills linebacker, four after that as a linebacker special teamer for the Pittsburgh Steelers, a teammate of Antonio Brown, who told the Steelers he wants to be traded the other day. Arthur Motes talked about Antonio Brown and what he was like as a teammate.
When it comes to teammates, I mean, he was one of my favorite teammates just because outside of week 17, you knew he was always going to show up. He was always going to give a league-level effort, and he was just a down-to-earth person. I mean, everyone sees the nice cars and the expensive clothes and things like that, but, I mean, he's a guy that he will joke with you and hang with you if you're a $100 million guy or if you're a practice squad player. He's still going to show you that love and just ultimately embrace you. So that's why I feel like a lot of the guys rallied around him.
Outside of week 17, he's a great teammate. We'll get back to that in a moment. Also on the show today, we had Andy Lindahl, who covers the Denver Broncos for KOA Radio in Denver, Colorado. The Broncos acquired Joe Flacco in a trade today, and we asked Andy if that's an upgrade at quarterback for the Denver Broncos.
For the fans, they're reacting like it isn't. The town is not exactly accepting this well. Look, I think it probably is. Now, you're going to have to keep Joe healthy, and you're going to have to keep the pocket clean, and you're going to have to do a better job of protecting, you know, the quarterback, which has been an issue, frankly, since even pre-Peyton Manning days. So there's still some work to be done. But I do think I think things got a little bit much for Case last year. And I'll tell you this right now. I'm not positive they don't let Case go. As it was explained to us from Ian Rappaport, our NFL insider, and he does work on NFL Network, he basically said at this point the Broncos don't owe Joe any guaranteed money. So Flacco may be on a one-year prove-it deal because they could just cut him after this year and not have to owe him anything.
Very interesting out there in Denver. Our Twitter poll today, I think, was kind of interesting, Steve. We asked, we wanted a sentiment of Bills fans. Do you want Antonio Brown if that could happen in a trade with the Pittsburgh Steelers? And it was a pretty interesting split of sentiment. Most of our respondents, and we had a lot, 43% say, no, you don't want him. He is bad for the locker room. And another 10% say, no, you don't want him because he won't be effective. So 53% said, no, you don't want him. 33% said, yes, I'll take Antonio Brown, but not for a first-round pick. And 14% say, yes, we'll take him whatever it takes. So it was 53-47. No's have it over the yeses. Interesting. I didn't know how that would turn out. I find that
That's
interesting split.
We're both fascinated by that, and I think that it's almost a coin. 47-53, yeses
close.
And no's.
Yeah. Very close.
For whatever reason.
Yeah. Good show today. And we're going to have a good one tomorrow.
Some good guests on Mark Motes and Jenny Ventes. It was great. Yeah.
I want to thank our production assistants, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, James Roble, our producer, Jay Harris. We're back here tomorrow, 12 noon, with more good stuff like we had today. Join us tomorrow at noon, One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.